Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How are you doing? Oh my God, the world is, I have nothing to add. I have nothing to add about the world, so I'm not going to even try. Okay, you don't need me to talk about this. But anyway, thanks a lot for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Dr. Lisa, the self-proclaimed psychotherapist, which is just basically my way of saying I can ask people whatever the fuck I feel like. And we are a really great station, and you know, I really think this is a great time to support us because of how important, you know, free expression is. And this is free form radio at its finest. And it's a really good, well-run, it's a good organization, and we need money desperately. And we also need listeners, and we need your support. We need you. We need you. We appreciate you listening to us, and we need you. So please go to radiofreebrooklyn.org and check us out. Okay? Like, think about donating money. Just even if you even think like that, that would be great. If you actually did it, much, much better. But check out all our programming. We've got so much great stuff on there. And any kind of music, comedy, talk, anything, everything. You got to find something you like on there. I also want to give a little shout out to Pierogi, a gallery that's at 175 North 9th Street in Williamsburg, because they are having an art benefit that I'm actually participating in. It. You can buy my work. You can buy it. That's another thing you should do. Buy the work, and all the money, 100% of the proceeds go, of at least my work, I don't know, but all the work goes to the Ukraine. So that's 175 North 9th, opens tomorrow. Okay. Now we're on to our guest, Christian Finnegan. You can't hear me?
I hear you with my ears.
Wow, we're having a little bit of a technical screw-up here. Do you have the right... Christian Finnegan is here, and I'm just learning now that he can't hear me. That is so weird. It's the right microphone. I mean, it's the right thing. The headphones is... See?
I mean, I can hear you with my ears. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to look into this, and I've never had this before. We are a nonprofit, so we can't afford like the producers.
I probably could have timed that a little better. About to introduce me.
No, that's a perfect time. Are you kidding? Let's not keep this a secret. How about, do you think if you took your headphones off, you could hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, let's do that.
As long as you can hear me.
I can totally hear you, and it sounds great, and it looks like it's coming through.
Then we're good to go.
So we're going to have a great conversation.
People don't know that we're friends in real life.
Yes,
this isn't some awkward DJ guest conversation. We actually know each other.
Yes. But I am really honored, honest to God. I'm really honored. I was going to make jokes about you, Slum. No, I have a real celebrity on. And he's
maybe
not going
to.
He's a very self-effacing man, which to me is hugely, hugely charming. And he is hugely, hugely charming. And I have, let me just show you this. I have three pages of notes, right? Two of the three pages are bio on Christian. So I'm not going to really do that right now.
Nah.
I mean, he's been on morning TV. He's been the Today Show. He's been on nighttime, you know, shows. He's had his, you've had your own TV show, right?
I have.
Yeah. He's like, if you haven't heard of him, then you just don't know much about comedy, and go do your own fucking research. That's all I have to say.
Like vaccinations and do your own research.
And you've had like many specials. I'm not going to go on about. And also, Christian also happens to be like everything else that, you know, he's on all the cylinders. He's, you know, smart, funny, handsome, charming, all that. And he's married to this woman. Like, I think you should get an award for being married to Cambry Cruz.
Yeah. It's, do you mean because what an accomplishment it is or how challenging it is on a day-to-day basis?
No,
because...
no. Just like, how can you be around somebody who just like in the last year or two, like Cambry, who owns or started, your co-owners really.
Well, it's our money, it's her place. That's
yeah.
what I that's
yeah,
what I say.
And you help out.
Too. Yeah, you're I take out the garbage.
You're part of it. But she, her comedy club, which she started like just like eight years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So that was this year's best comedy venue from Time Out New York.
Yep, that's QED, and that's in Astoria, Queens, and you can find that at QEDAstoria.com. See, we're always pitching. We always you have to keep promoting.
I mean, it's
yeah,
it's
got to keep the lights
like,
on.
I think it's doing really well right now, isn't it?
Pretty, you know, comparatively. Well. I mean, obviously yeah. the last 2 years have been brutal, but yeah. it's starting to tick upwards. I mean, the weekends have been good. The weekdays are still a little
yeah,
hit and miss.
People are a little slow about getting out. Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, and Cambry's one who brought this to my attention. I mean, she, you know, all when people are working from home, the idea of like,
right.
what, I'm going to put on mm-hmm. pants on a Wednesday mm-hmm. and go out. Like, it's just not, you know, on a Friday or Saturday, it feels natural to go out and do stuff. But I think that whole culture of, hey, let's meet for a drink after work and then go somewhere.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
kind of
no,
still
that's an interesting
iffy.
Point. yeah. I always feel like that. Yeah. But I don't feel like I have to wear pants if I go to QED. You don't
no,
need, you,
no,
there's
pants
no requirement
absolutely.
To wear pants.
We discourage it, in fact.
I think you'd have more fun without your pants on there, actually. No, what I meant was, how can you be around somebody who, like, all of a sudden decides, well, I think I'm going to learn how to ice skate. And the next thing you know, they're like ice skating around Rockefeller. You see videos.
Just...
And then like, I'm going to learn how to watercolor, which is the hardest medium in painting, you know, watercolor. Yeah. And then like the next, like, how do you deal with that? Like, does she like sleep? Like, how do you deal with that?
It's a strange phenomenon. I mean, she really is just constantly, there are certain people. And, you know, I know that did Radio Free Brooklyn, who founded Radio?
Tom Tenney.
Oh, Tom Tenney. Yeah, Tom Tenney, who I've known
forever.
Since the late 90s. But like, you know, people like Tom and people like Robert Pritchard and a lot of the people that I started with, whatever, there are certain people that just create cool things so that cool things exist. And that's such an admirable quality.
Oh my
and I love
God.
To be around those people. And Cambry is kind of like the queen of that. I mean, she just sees something and she's like, why doesn't this exist? And she does it, you know, and she does it with her own life too. She's like, I want to learn to ice skate. And then she gets super into it. And you know, she ran for town council in upstate New York last year.
Cambry, you should get her book. Her book is amazing. What's the name?
Oh,
Burn Down the Hat. And you will come to learn that Cambry had no help.
None. She had negative help.
Yeah. Negative. So she's a pretty remarkable woman. I don't know. I guess I don't know. I don't know if I, me personally, I don't know if I'd have the self-esteem for that. Like, it would either make me feel inspired, hopefully, or just like getting back in bed. And I don't know.
No,
but
there
obviously
are times,
she's good.
I mean, definitely,
she's helped you.
You know, there are definitely times where it probably has a negative effect on my productivity slightly, just because, like, well, I can't be that, so I might as well.
No one can be
just
that.
Just play PlayStation for 6 hours. But, you know, I remember I did a piece once at the Risk storytelling show where I talked about that I've kind of always filled the role of being, like, an emotional Sherpa to the person who I was dating at any given time, that it's just like, you know, whatever off run you have, I'm there to kind of just like be there to sort of hold your hair back, you know. And with her, it's a positive thing. In past
yeah.
relationships, it's been a negative thing.
Right.
But with her, it's kind of like, you know, she's always trying to fit 15 pounds into a 10 pound bag. So I'm kind of there to help manage that as best I can. And so I think that, you know, we all end up with the person who's giving us something we need.
Hopefully.
Whether it's positive or not, you know, and with Cambry, it's like she's just alive. She's alive in a way that other people aren't.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's what I love about her so much.
Oh,
you know, whereas I feel like I'm like a lot of people who, you know, I always sometimes feel like I'm always sometimes, that's weird. Like I'm operating my body via remote control from some third location. Wow. Do you know what I mean? That it's like I'm, whereas Cambria is in the, she is in the driver's seat of her own life, which I super admire.
Right. Well, you are no slouch. For God's sakes, whatever. We could do the whole show. Like I said, we could do the whole show in your bio, but that would be, would that be boring? I don't know. We're not going to find out. The thing is that you guys have been together a lot. You guys have been together
109 years.
109 years.
Yeah. We've been together since the beginning of 2003 and married since 2007 and 2006. Oh boy, I probably should get that right. She's not, Cambry, please don't get mad at me. we've been together for a long time, half my life at this point.
Yeah, and you guys seem like a great influence on each other, and also close to my heart. Like, you didn't have kids. That's just my personal. That's my personal thing. That's why everything's so great. Never mind. But the reason Christian's here today, in particular, is because he did a special over the pandemic called Show Your Work, and it really moved me. Frankly. And I watched it again recently, but I thought it really stood out as without sounding like a cheesy art person, I don't want to get into there's no way I can talk about it without just going overboard, but I just really felt like it was a work, a real work of art in the way that I felt that the communication and the emotional connection and all that stuff transcended comedy or any particular art form. It was there was a really pure connection between the viewer and the creator. And I don't, I love comedy, but I don't think I've actually seen rarely. I mean, Hannah Gatsby, maybe. Mm-hmm. But when I think about that. But the thing about Christian's special, and it's called Show Your Work, and it's streaming now free on Amazon,
yeah,
right?
You can get that
in there.
You can check it out on YouTube or Apple TV or Amazon, but it is free on and Netflix, I think. No, but it's free on Amazon, though.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Do you get money if they pay for it other places?
I'm sure
a little bit,
at some point.
Not much.
I mean, I got paid a
fee for
small advance, which I'm once that gets recouped, God willing, I'll start to make money off that. But honestly, it's like this isn't a financial.
Okay, so we're not
going.
No. So anyway, I got the notes here. It's a stand-up special about playing the hand you're dealt, filmed in a tiny. It's filmed at QED, I like the way this person describes Christian's work. Christian Finnegan brings his brand of hilarious and insightful social autopsy to topics that range from blah, blah, blah. So anyway, he's really insightful and he's really funny and all that. But I think what's really great about this special is that it was filmed at their comedy club or Cambry's comedy club. And it cuts masterfully between Christian doing his set. It was about an hour set.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing's about an hour. So it was probably, I would say it's probably about 45 minutes of comedy and then 15 minutes of other stuff, or 50 minutes of comedy.
Talking to the camera and even showing things like you cleaning the toilet there.
Yeah. It is Show Your Work quite literally. And it kind of all folds in because, QED stands for the Latin phrase quod erat demonstrandum, which means I have shown my work, essentially.
Oh.
It's obviously the pandemic was challenging for everybody, but it was especially, it was in my particular instinct, it was difficult because I kind of lost two jobs. I mean, because in addition to doing stand-up and all that, I also helped Cambry operate the space, and not only did it shut down, we actually had to move in. We actually lived there.
Yeah, that was another thing. You lost your apartment during during the pandemic, during making the special.
Well, Lost, I don't know if it's or exactly. Whatever. Well, what happened was is that we had given our land. We had lived in the same apartment for 15 years. We were ready to move.
I've been there, I think.
Probably, yeah. I've interviewed and we just wanted to move. In January of 2020, we gave our landlord notice, say, hey, on April 1st, we're going to move out. Well, then the world fell apart, and we said to our landlord, like, hey, do you mind if we hang around for another few months while this all, the world works itself out? And he said, nope. He said, because he obviously wanted to jack up the rent because we had been there so long. And so we weren't going to, you know, we didn't, we have a little tiny cabin in upstate New York. And so for about a year, a little more than a year, we split time. We spent about half the week up in the woods and then half the week in Queens living at QED. And we had a mattress that we had backstage that we would throw down. And
they slept on the stage, and you can see a bit of that in the special. Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing that you talk about it. I mean, it's fantastic.
Oh yeah. I would have to take I had a foot operating camping shower in the basement that you fill it up with water, and then you use a foot pedal and you press it down, and that, you know, surrounded by to-go cups and paper towels and stuff.
All in there, in the special.
I want it to be like the opposite of badass. Do you know? I mean, so many, well, first of all, I'm not in a position where I really could pull off a badass special anyway. It's like, I mean, you know, just being realistic, it's like there are certain comics that they can have the 200 seat theater and they can have the flames in the background and have it really, I don't like that kind of comedy anyway.
Right.
But I thought, well, if this is going to be kind of a small, intimate affair, like, why not lean into that fully? I just, you know, the whole sort of leather jacket, flames in the background, I'm the bad boy of comedy shtick, like, it is so tedious to me.
Well, I do feel like you made yourself vulnerable in a way that most comedians really don't, because they don't want you to see behind the curtain. They don't want, I mean, there's a maybe it's like a showbiz kind of, you know, like, but I want to go through like how it came out, the whole thing, but I just was going to, so that you guys, if you haven't seen it, so I was going to compare it to, what came out of there were a bunch of specials done during the pandemic. And one of them was that people talked about a lot that got a lot of airtime was, Inside by Bo Burnham. Yeah. And everybody said, this is what makes me mad about the culture, folks. So everybody was like, yeah, Bo Burnham, he really exposed himself. It was so like you saw his beard grow over a period of years, and he didn't know what months, and he didn't know what he was going to do, and he didn't know how he was going to go. In the meantime, Bo Burnham filmed that whole thing in a $3.25 million guest house on his girlfriend's property. So if he's depressed, that's his own fucking fault. And that's the kind of thing that our society puts out there as, you know, real and vulnerable and, you know, something. But I don't relate to that. But I felt that whatever that is that was not there. It's like Christian, like I felt like Christian, like you took risks. Like somebody could look at you and say, this guy isn't making enough money, or he doesn't have an apartment. And like, what else does that mean? In the meantime, no comics have any money.
So much of, you know, it's bad. It's bad strategy career wise. I'll say that. Because like you're saying with the Bo Burnham thing, it's like nobody actually wants to see real vulnerability. Not really. What they want to see is they want to see vulnerability flavored product. Do you know what I mean? I actually have a lot of admiration for Bo Burnham. It's not.
But
it's like he's hugely ambitious and hugely talented and a true original. And there aren't many
and
of them.
Easy to like.
Yeah, absolutely. But there is this sort of phenomenon, and it's, you know, this is where I start to sound like cranky old Gen X man, but the phrase all the feels, have you heard that?
Yes,
that,
of course.
That term?
Yeah.
That to me is sort of my blanket opinion. Like, that's what all of that is to me. It's like, I don't want to feel, it's like when somebody posts something on Twitter or whatever, and like, oh my God, I am crying laughing right now. It's like, no, you're not. Nobody
yeah,
is.
Right.
Because people right. don't really have real emotions anymore. So they kind of want just something, like they have to ramp up their reactions to things because they're trying to make up for the emotions they don't actually have. This is a little
obtuse. It's our culture is supposed to help society move forward and all that stuff and, you know, and add something. And
but it's very easy to watch Bo Burnham, you know, and no, against no offense to him, suffering because, you know, he's not.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? There's no real, I mean, people act like he was like living in that room and he never like, come on, who are we kidding people?
No.
Stop.
And all the equipment he had and all that other shit.
Yeah.
So, but like when I saw the special that you did, I was just like, I mean, I've seen both. I mean, I saw his whatever, but I mean, you know, it's good. I mean, honestly, I saw it on a plane on an iPhone and it was a little boring, but that's neither here nor there. Well, but when I saw yours, I was like, oh my God, like Christian and Cambry, look at them. Like I feel like I felt seen. I felt seen.
Thank you.
And I don't feel like that a lot. So I want to go through with you like your inspirations and your thinkings behind it. And then you know, at the end, I mean, before we leave, I want to like talk about because how you're feeling about like where you are now compared to where you were then. Because what's really interesting also in the, you say things in the beginning, like, what did you say? I don't know what's going to happen. I can't see the future. Like, this is, what did you say?
Yeah. Well, there's a quote that I love that I feature in the special, this psychologist, Rollo May, I believe his name is, he says that depression is the inability to construct a future, you know, and that's, I think, something that everybody was feeling during the pandemic, some more acutely than others, but it's just the inability to sort of, it's like when there's like a fog and you can't see 5 feet in front of you, and that's a really hard place to just sit in for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, not that anybody prefers bad news, but sometimes even a negative reality is easier to live with than sort of a vague nothing, you know?
Right.
So I think that was kind of the feeling of inertia that everybody was sort of dealing with, especially in 2020. I mean, I think eventually people started to adjust to it and change their lives accordingly. But, you know, it was really...
Yeah,
bizarre.
This was filmed on September 6th, 2020,
and then it didn't come out until a year later, just because we took a long time to edit it. And you know, for people who see it, there's a documentary aspect to it, like you said. Yes. There's some graphic effects, and so that took it. And since it was really just a thing that my friends and I did together, we didn't have any. You know, I have a friend who's a really fantastic director, Victor Varnado, who I know has probably done stuff on Radio Free Brooklyn. And my friend Steve Rosenthal, who's just an unbelievable editor, and they had worked together before. And and so I just kind of called them over the summer of 2020. I was like, hey, I need something to stop me from going crazy. Do you want to work on this with me? But because it was just the three of us, you know, they have other jobs and other projects.
Right,
and so it took us a long time to kind of.
Right. But I also think that's why it's so focused as far as.
Yeah,
the
I agree.
Message.
There's not too many cooks. It's just the three message. Of us. And then we sold it to a distributor and then they put it out. So.
Right. But I love this quote from here's something I wrote down. So like you said in the beginning, it's like QED. Is this an ad? This will either be an ad or a eulogy. And so you said that in the special, and like today we're talking about that QED was voted the best comedy venue of this year. So I mean, I think that's so fabulous.
That really blew me away.
I love that.
Time out in New York, and it was such a great, nice little boost because it was a voting thing. Like, you know, I've been in this long enough, and I know too many people who work in media. I see through stuff a little bit, like when New York Magazine profiles a certain comedian, or you know, a magazine talks about a certain venue. I'm like, oh, okay, well, somebody knows somebody, and
it's a publicist.
That's the way it works, and all that. But this was just a voting thing. This was just anybody could get online and vote, and so that was a real nice.
And
nice
it's Astoria, guys. I mean, it's not like it's in Midtown Manhattan or someplace that's like really easy to get to. That you know, and So I no matter what, I love that because we can look at this through a positive lens no matter what.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wanted to hear about like what it was like for you as a stand-up comic. You lost two jobs, but also like, you know, stand-up comedy is your life. I mean,
for better or for worse. Yeah. I have mixed feelings about that decision now, but yes.
I don't think it's a decision for you.
Probably not. I mean, it was weird because it wasn't like something I'd planned on doing when I was really young. I mean, I was a big comedy fan, but it never really occurred to me. It was just kind of a mix of the things that I liked, and it was the first thing that I tried and didn't want to quit, you know?
Yeah.
It was the first thing that I tried that when it went well, I wanted to do it again, and when it went badly, I wanted to do it again, you know, which is, you know, not...
Yeah.
I think when you find that, that's pretty much telling you that's where you're supposed to...
Yeah. Yeah. You're, you know, incredibly... You're great at it. I mean, you're great... Your performing is great and your writing is great. And the whole, he's really good at acting out too. I was noticing that on the specials, the acting, that's like theater training or something, right?
I went to college as an actor and kind of hated it. I mean, I liked the actual classes, but the idea of being an actor, you know, it started to get really depressing as I started to, you know, see actor people I knew. And, you know, I have friends who are actors who haven't acted in 2 years.
Yeah.
Because they have to wait for a part to come along. And mm-hmm. and then once, you know, I'm sure you've gotten these emails or calls from friends who are like, hey, I'm in this play. It kind of sucks, but can you come anyway?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like, that's awful.
My God.
And so I
call that a trapped in the theater experience, trapped in a theater.
I'm fine with it as long as they give me a heads up. Don't tell me it's great if you don't actually, if you know it's actually not great. You know, because I've had a couple of those where it's like, no, it's the best. And then I'll be watching. It's like, okay, you know, this isn't great.
Generous.
You know, it's not great.
but you clearly are somebody that has your vision or writing or whatever. You want to do your own material in whatever you would, you know, I can't imagine you, if you were going to do a play, you'd want to write the play.
I mean, sometimes I wish it wasn't like that. I think that I would love to get out of my own navel a little bit, you know, and, I admire people who are kind of collaborators by nature.
Yeah, me too.
It's who can do it and not get all bent out of shape about it. And I wish I had more of that in me. But at the end of the day, I think I'm a little bit of mercenary in that sense that I kind of like. That's one of the things that appealed to me about stand-up comedy, in addition to actually being on stage and all that, is that it's a one-man band.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
For
it's,
sure.
If it goes well, it's on you. If it doesn't go well, it's on you. You're kind of a wandering samurai.
And you
kind
can
of
change it at will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even on stage. Well,
because that's the thing. Before I started doing comedy, I worked in publishing for a couple of years and I did some freelance, like freelance culture writing. Like I wrote some movie reviews for the Village Voice and music reviews for Musician Magazine. And, I just, even magazine writing, it's too much for me. Like I can't lock myself in a room for 5 days write 10,000 words or whatever.
Yeah, that's a lot of writing.
You know, for me, I just don't have the attention span. And so, I'll rewrite the same paragraph 1,000 times.
Mm.
And so stand-up comedy was kind of ideal in the sense that you can write this small little thing or more often outline. You're not even really writing, and you can find out pretty quickly whether it has some legs to it, you know?
Right.
And
for me,
I need those little bite-sized chunks.
It's great. So I want to know like what kind of state of mind, like where was your head? Like, how did you get, what were you thinking when you first started, when you got started doing this? Like, were you like, I'm going to shoot myself if I don't do this or?
No, I don't, you know.
Were you writing material?
I was. I mean, when my first few years, where I know like Tom Tenney from and stuff like that.
No, I meant the special.
Oh, the special. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No. Well, we already have two pages of bio here.
Trust me. There's plenty of times where I want to shoot myself. But it was one of those things where, for the first 4 or 5 months, three or four months of from March till say May or June. Everything was just closed, period.
Mm-hmm.
But then once we started doing shows in the backyard at QED, which mm-hmm. seats no more than 28 people, and we started doing some outdoor shows for people, and it really was kind of cathartic for not just the comics, but a lot of the audience too. And it was really quite nice. And we kind of got the feeling that the city was going to come down on that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little weird with the way stand-up comedy, in the city's defense, stand-up comedy is a little bit like cockroaches. Like, you can try to stomp them out, but they're just going to find places to hide.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of unsafe shows going on in 2020 comedy-wise. But they really kind of came down like a hammer on stand-up comedy specifically. Like, for a long time, you could have trivia nights in bars, but not stand-up, you know, which seems a little absurd.
Stupid.
Yeah, it felt arbitrary. It felt personal. It's the opposite of arbitrary. But it felt definitely like the city and the state, Como specifically, had it out for this industry in particular. And so we kind of got the feeling around August that, like, this might not be long. Like, they might shut this down at a certain point. And, you know, so I kind of, at that point, I had about 30 to 40 minutes of material that I had really honed pretty well before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to just film something before this before this outside show thing comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I have this venue. Why wouldn't I do this?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just started very small like that. And so I would say about 2/3 of the material in the show is stuff that was kind of polished and that I had previous to the pandemic.
And I just want to let listeners know if they don't know anything about comedy. No, but I mean, normally you'd be making a living touring, you know, traveling with this stuff and doing it in theaters all over America.
Yeah, usually you would never record something until you would really hammer it out.
So that was really your lifestyle, is really just writing the stuff, going out, polishing it, and then after. So that whole idea of going out and polishing it and performing on the road, that was gone, right?
Yeah,
that was
completely
a big part of your life.
Yeah, and you know, there's probably, you know, maybe 20 to 25% of the special that is stuff that was written in lockdown and really only performed a handful of times before I recorded it, which is not the way you really do it.
Right. That's what I want you guys to
know. It was very strange being home and actually rehearsing stand up, which is something you never really do.
Oh, really?
No,
you were rehearsing it? Like,
well, because I had to memorize it. Like, some of it was literally that new that I didn't know it.
So you would perform to like a mirror?
Essentially. Or I would pace and have a tape recorder and then listen to it and then do it again and listen to it again.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, that's not the way it's usually done. And hopefully it's not too evident.
It's not. No.
But yeah, it was definitely a different way of doing things.
So that was a whole new technique that you had to learn, right?
I mean, it was refreshing to know that it could work that way.
Yeah.
I, at the end of the day, still don't think it's
optimal.
The optimal way. Not for me. I mean, I because a lot of times audiences will kind of tell you where to go with a joke. Like, you might have a joke that it's like a B or a B minus, and then you'll be doing it live, and you'll see, oh, people are kind of reacting to this one sentence that I may not have thought was the big punchline or whatever.
I'm
going to lean into that a little further and see where that goes. And so you do miss sometimes that, you know, back and forth.
Right. Except you have so much experience. But the thing is, how did you come up with the idea to do those talking to camera? Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Or, you know, a confessional, whatever. Interview segments, whatever you want to call it. I think that it was something that occurred to me pretty much from the get-go, but I didn't really spend too much time thinking about it. And then, like, a couple weeks before we actually filmed, I talked to Victor about, like, hey, can we make sure that there's a camera person there to kind of capture some B-roll of a setting up? And and at that point, it was just going to be that, just some footage of us setting up and whatnot. And then I think after we shot it, we're like, well, why don't we kind of flesh this out a little and tell the story of what this is a little more with some actual interview segments.
So you mean after it was all shot, that's when you decided to...
I don't remember exactly the order in which it came together. I mean, I knew I definitely wanted to have those things where I was, you know, cleaning the toilets and sort of bringing the garbage out. And I knew that was the kernel of what I wanted the special to be. I wanted to be a down and dirty, this is like a comedian's actual life, mm-hmm. not the sort of glamour, you know, or whatever. In a comedian in his 40s, not like a guy in his 20s who's out getting wasted and late overnight, whatever. But I think that I don't remember, but I believe that the idea of doing actual just straight to camera interview segments came slightly afterwards, but it's all blur at this point. Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking? Like, what did you feel like you wanted to, like, I mean, the special goes beyond, I mean, it's great comedy, that great jokes. It's a given, but like, it goes beyond that. And I'm just wondering, like, what the fuck were you thinking? No, I mean, like, what was it that you were wanting to get to there? What did you want people, you made a connection. What was going on there?
I don't know. I think it was maybe some, a bit of stoicism that maybe I was not aware that I had, you know, or that was something that appealed to me. Not that I had it in any greater degree than anyone else, but that appealed to me as sort of a remedy for what was going on in 2020. You know, the special, and there's an element to the special where there's like handwriting on the screen a lot, you know, where, and the final image as I'm leaving a stage is just the word "onward" with an exclamation point, you know? And that kind of was sort of my mantra in 2020 and in 2021. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still is in a way. It's just keep going. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, keep going. Don't overthink it. Just push forward, you know? And I definitely feel like that sort of keep calm and carry on thing was helpful to me, that mindset, especially when it feels like there is no direction. My lizard brain will tell me to... I don't know which direction to go, so I better just stay here and do nothing, you know? But the better part of me, my higher mind will tell me, no, pick a direction and go in it. Even if it's not necessarily, you're not sure it's the right one, it's better to go somewhere than to just sit around and wait for the answer to reveal itself.
Right. You know, it's so funny because you use the word stoicism.
Yeah.
And I feel like... And I'm using the word vulnerability. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you think those as being like contradictory, but they're not really.
Not. So, but I also, there's a certain strength in that vulnerability. That's what we're talking about, really. You weren't afraid to reveal like how fucked up things were because you felt like that you were confident, I think, in that you were delivering a sort of, hey, it's okay, guys.
Yeah.
Behind that. And I think that's really,
I don't want to overstate. I hope that people watching it first and foremost understand it's a stand-up comedy special. I talk about my junk. You know, it's not like, it's not a tearful TED talk or anything.
This is Dr. Lisa. I don't want to talk about the funny stuff. We only want to get to the dirt,
Sometimes
if you're not crying by the time you leave, this show isn't a success.
Well, okay. Well, then by that, I've been sobbing this whole time. I'm crying on the inside.
Now, you guys, we're taking for granted that I already, you know, it's funny. It's very entertaining. It's very, very entertaining and very emotionally satisfying.
I'm a huge Elvis Costello fan, and there's an Elvis Costello album called Mighty Like a Rose, which I think is based on an old Irish or English folk song or whatever. But I've always loved that image that it's like, you're strong enough to be crushable. You know what I mean? That there is a strength in just being like, yeah, this is my pathetic life or whatever, you know, not pathetic, but you know what I mean? That this is warts and all what it is. And I'm not trying to put on some show or act. And that there's a strength in that. I find it.
I agree. And I think that's kind of the crux of what I'm trying to tell you guys, that there is the strength and vulnerability, and how inspiring that is and how important that is and how, especially, I mean, in the arts, people avoid it in comedy, and, you know, I've thought about that. Actually, I was thinking about making a comparison to visual art, something I know more about probably, is like when I think about, how opaque, like you go to an art gallery And like, it could be like, you know, like the blood from somebody's birth on the canvas or something, right? And you feel like, but it looked, you know, you can't tell just by looking at it. It gives you the feeling that the artist is really exposing themselves, but the actual product that you're looking at is so oblique.
Yeah.
That they're really not.
No, it's showy. It's kind of like I was saying, it's that emotional flavored product. Do you know what I mean?
It's right.
Yeah. It's more like a stunt.
Right. It's a stunt. You know? And because of the way it's produced, maybe it's on a really big canvas in a beautiful, expensive gallery, you know, that money, the way things are produced really hides.
Yeah.
Can really cover.
Well, it's like, you know, it reminds me of like, you know, Andre Serrano, you know, Piss Christ, you know, which the big to do back when we used to hate Giuliani for other reasons back in the 90s, when there's an artist who had a crucifix in a jar of urine and it was caused a big stir or whatever, you know, and you know, I kind of rolled my eyes at it because it's just like, well, if you didn't tell us it was urine, then I wouldn't know. If it wasn't called Piss Christ, I wouldn't know. You wouldn't know.
Right.
And so it's like, obviously I want artists to be as crazy and controversial as they can possibly be. But on a personal aesthetic level, I kind of roll my eyes at it. It's like, you did something good for you.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Like I made this painting that says getting arrested is great for an artist's career. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's really what we're talking about. So how do you feel like when you look, like there was like, think about, I'm like trying to imagine what you might have felt like when you were in the middle of doing that and thinking about it and stuff like that, and how things actually turned out. I mean, we talked about that with QED winning that award and stuff, but what were you thinking at the time, like where you are now? Like, did you think you were ever going to get through this? Are you back?
I mean, you know, even at the toughest moments of the pandemic, I mean, I never fully lost sight of the fact that we were in a better position than a lot of people, you know, in the sense that we had some savings and that luckily the real financially lucrative part of my career happened before the pandemic, which to the extent that there was one, but that I wasn't, you know, I did feel bad for a lot of comics who were just cresting as the pandemic happened, you know, like that had to really be tough, you know, is when you're, you know, I just got an agent. I just got, you know, I'm getting auditions all of a sudden. And then to go from that 60 to zero, you know, that had to be hard, you know, which for me wasn't really the case. I mean, luckily I had ebbed prior to that. Well, I kind of lost interest in that whole world. I was on a sitcom for 100 episodes that you may have seen when you're on the treadmill at 2 in the afternoon. But
do you want to say the name of it?
It was called Are We There Yet? I was the white guy on a black family sitcom, which was great for my like non-comedy life. Mm-hmm. But in terms of my career, kind of brought it to a screeching halt because I was just basically gone for about 2.5 years. Oh, like I couldn't audition for anything. I wasn't really able to do many sets as many as, you know, because it was 100 episodes in less than 2 years. And
is that grueling? You know, people think, oh, he's on a sitcom. It's really grueling. Was that, I mean, it's really like glamorous and stuff like that.
No, we shot
it's
in really Stamford, Connecticut. I mean, in a random warehouse.
It's a hard life, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. And I got to meet a lot of like 80s and 90s celebrities who would do guest spots like... Cindy Williams, who played Shirley and Laverne and Shirley, played my mom in 2 episodes. Wow. Like that's pretty so cool.
Yeah, it must have been great. Yeah.
So I mean, it was a wonderful experience, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. But by the time 2020 rolled around, I was in a different phase of my career. I don't really enjoy acting. I kind of wanted to get away from it, and so I acknowledge that for. Even within the small little bubble of entertainment, I had it a little easier than certain other people.
Interesting.
But and not even comparing it to people who actually were like first responders. You know, people actually really had skin in the game.
Right.
But, you know, I think maybe because, you know, we're talking about Cambry and how she's a very motivated person and she's alpha is not the right word. I mean, she is kind of alpha, but like type A, you know, she's definitely an aggressive person. Yeah. But as a result, I think she's also maybe more prone to intense bouts of despair or fear about the when her path is blocked, you know, because she's always moving forward.
And it's out of her control.
Exactly. When she's not able to be in control of things. And I was able, I'm able to reconcile myself to that a little more easily. And so I maybe was, I was joking to people that the pandemic feeling that was going on in 2020 is like I feel all the time. And so it felt like stepping into a bathtub that was like the perfect temperature. It's like, oh, the way I feel inside is now the way everything feels outside. So this is perfectly natural to me. I feel like a pig in shit, you know?
So did you feel like, so a lot of, well, because that was really a difficult time for QED because it's based on people going out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, and of course, it's one of those things where it sounds like nonsense, but it really is true that it had just really taken flight. I mean, obviously, it had been around for 5.5 years by the time the pandemic rolled around, but it had only in that last 6 months did it finally feel like, okay, great. Cambry's got a staff of bartenders that she's all happy with. The shows are all kicking ass. All the producers are gung-ho. We don't have to worry. Like, we're making money finally. Excuse me. Sorry, I got hiccups. and so it really did feel like, you know, snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory in many ways. And we're, you know, knock on wood, it's a different kind of success now. Things have gotten better recently. But for the first time since then, I think Cambry and by extension, I feel a bit of calmness towards the direction it's headed in.
Oh,
like a positive feeling of like, okay, this is trending in the right direction, generally speaking.
Right. You know? So it took 2 years.
Yeah, but it's certainly not back where it was financially. It never will be, probably, if we're being perfectly frank. Well, because we're one of the, and I think a lot of people have gone through this change too, is, you know, we're now closed Monday and Tuesday. It used to be open 7 days a week, and there were like 100 events a month. And now it's open like 4.5 days a week, and there's maybe 30, 40 events a month, you know? And so even if every show is selling out, it's not going to bring in the same amount of money it was before. But I think we've kind of both come to the conclusion that it's more sustainable for us mentally to do it this way. And if all of a sudden the Wednesday and Thursday and Sunday shows are just kicking ass and are like, we have more producers than we know what to do with, well, then she might expand it to Tuesday or
but for
now it's like we kind of are like really enjoying glad. Having that life work balance.
Yeah. And you're, you know, and it's also doing as well as any, I mean, the whole world has changed.
Yeah. I mean, we're all living in the same world.
So I wanted to ask you, we've got 10 minutes left. I want to find out, like, what kind of reactions did you get? Like, what is there reactions to the special that you got that stuck in your mind?
You know, I mean, obviously, I wish more people could see it.
Of course.
You know, it's a little hard to cut through the white noise, especially because I don't have
a major publicist.
No, I don't really. I don't. And I am the worst at that. Like, I'm super bad. Cambry's great at it, but she's too busy.
Yeah.
And I'm not a good promoter.
You could use a little help with your Instagram.
I tried it for like 2 months and I kind of was like,
I'm like going, well, he's got 55,000 Twitter followers. Let's go look at the Instagram.
That's pathetic. I just started the Instagram when the special came out. And I think I had like 700 people.
What?
I know.
He's got less than me.
I'm not a picture person. I've never been a picture person.
No, you don't need to do all that. I mean, you obviously have Twitter covered, so
but,
it doesn't
matter. Well, Twitter, that feeds into the worst parts of my brain, so I'm on Twitter obsessively.
You don't need all of it. You don't need all of it.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you have to kind of just be the best version of yourself, as they say, you know?
No.
And I just come to the conclusion that, I mean, I would like to be a little more active on Instagram and things like that, but not that much more. It's just not really my thing.
So have you heard, like, did anybody say anything?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what kinds of things have stuck with you as far as the reaction?
The responses I've gotten have all been exactly what I was looking for, is that, you know, people using words like, you know, funny but bittersweet, you know, or like, you know, impressive, you know, that it felt like more than just a stand-up special, that it felt that it had a little bit of gravitas to it, which is great, which is what I wanted. You know, I've always loved that sort of happy, sad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, stand up. I want the stand up to be just funny.
Like, yeah, I, yeah, you know, yeah, absolutely.
I want it to be,
it is
piss your pants funny or whatever. But if I'm going to package it in something a little larger than just turning on a camera and here's me doing stand up, I want there to be some shadows to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I want it to be mm-hmm. three dimensional.
Well, I thought it was really well done. I think that must have been hard to, you know, hard decisions on where to put the talking to camera, the confessionals and stuff
yeah.
like that. That was definitely...
I wish, you know, of course, afterwards it's like, oh man, I wish I had known this is what we were going to do beforehand, because I could have maybe sculpted my set in a way that kind of made, like, I'm really happy with how it shook out, but it probably could have saved us a couple months of edits and maybe. Going back and forth if I had been a
right,
little more.
But I mean, it really does let the comedy, the stand-up really breathe. So, I mean, that stuff is preserved, and the rhythm to it is really good. I mean, you guys worked hard on this, you can tell, but I think that, so you got the feeling that people are pretty moved by
I definitely,
it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I've been really happy with the reactions I've gotten. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, obviously you, when you work on something for a long time, you want the entire world to see it. I mean,
has that experience, 'cause I think, you know, what's really cool about it is that it, by nature, forced you to do things that you hadn't done before, like, you know, the talk, the confessionals, and also the way you practice. A lot of
yeah.
it made you develop a lot of. That's what happens, folks. Pushes you to develop new skills and stuff. So
yeah, it definitely it. I loved that it. Nobody wanted it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't something anybody asked
that
for.
That you had to, you know? Do right.
I just did it to do it. It was just something I've always tried to inspire in myself with not a massive degree of success. I think that I'm very much of my generation. I remember Patton Oswalt once saying that that a lot of comics of his generation, and although he's a little older than me, I'm still in his generation, that we're kind of waiting around for people to give us permission to do things, you know, to sort of almost knight us as like, mm-hmm. you are now a comedian, or, you know, and that's kind of by the nature of, you know, you have to get on a late night show, or you have to get a Comedy Central has to put your special on. Like, whereas younger comics just don't have those walls, you know, they're
right.
just like, well, because they can't, because all those gatekeepers have been rendered meaningless. And now there's 1,000 gates, but each gate is worth 1,000th as much, but they just don't have those hangups. And that's something right. I would love to try to teach this old dog, that new trick of just that, of seeing the world as why not,
right.
instead of, why, you know,
right with all the gatekeepers. So has it influenced your work going forward, or?
It has. I mean, I was telling you before we started, I just, for fun, I just started something 2 weeks ago, like just a Substack newsletter called New Music for Olds, which is like one of the things. I mean, I've had a harder time emotionally since the special came out than before it. You know, this last year was harder for me than I think 2020,
really?
I think, for personally. And I kind of, ever since the special, any sort of creative project has just felt like pulling teeth. And so I kind of looked at my life a few weeks ago. I was like, all right, well, what is it that you actually do? Like, not what you think you should do, or whether you wish you could do or have done. How do you spend your week?
Mm-hmm.
And once I eliminated all of the unhealthy or indefensible things that I do, just like playing video games or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, I listen to new music like constantly. Like I'm always just toggling through new release sections and just clicking play, because I love having like a new song that I love.
Mm.
And I know a lot of people, my former stepbrother, who is still my best friend, he and I used to have, you know, our whole relationship revolved around trading albums back and forth.
Mm.
But now he's, you know, he's got a real job, but he just doesn't have that mm-hmm. kind of wherewithal anymore. And so he's constantly asking me to like send him yeah. stuff. And so I was like, I know a lot of people like that who just, they love music, but they haven't bought a new album in 20 years because they think it's all K-pop or whatever. And, you know, there's great music out there. You just have to go find it and nobody has time for that. I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I started this newsletter. Just every 2 weeks, I send out a few songs with some sort of thoughts on why I think they're worth listening to. And that's the kind of thing where it's like, Nobody needs it. Nobody wants it. And I'm loving it. It's something I can do by myself. And I'm super jazzed about it.
And how can people find out about that?
Sign up for it. You can go to newmusicforolds.substack.com. I think if you just Google the phrase new music for olds.
I'll also put the link up when I post this show.
But if you just Google New Music for Olds or just go to my Twitter feed, mm-hmm. you'll see mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff about it.
And how are you feeling about that? We only have 5 minutes, mm-hmm. 4 minutes. So how are you feeling a little bit about the future of comedy in general? Is it getting... I always think of comedy as something that can be very nimble as far as, you know, keeping up with, you know, moving forward, developing, not just for you, but in general. But what's your feeling about the future? What's going on in comedy now? The future.
You know, I think every generation... And I think this is true in comedy, but it's also true in music. It's true of the arts in general, is that... Every generation is sort of a response to the generation directly preceding it. Mm. And I think for, you know, so I think for a long time, comedy was like super acerbic and negative. And there's sort of been this very pleasant kind of, there's a sort of a strain of comedy out there that I don't relate to personally, that's kind of, I like my comedy a little acerbic and negative because that's just how I grew up or whatever. And I think that there's sort of a reaction to that where people kind of, they want to be amused more than have that sort of negative laugh. You know, they want to be delighted. And that's to me fine. I mean, there's always going to be 10 different things going on in comedy. There's no comedy will manifest itself in a gazillion different ways. But
So maybe like less real or less...
Or less caustic.
Yeah.
I would say.
Well, that's the whole problem with this. I'm judgmental. That's right. That's the whole problem with these kids today. No, I mean, but, you know, like you can get yelled at for doing something that, like, no one has a sense of humor. It's kind of it's a little bit of a humorless generation, let's just say.
Well, that's what, yeah. And the thing is, in nobody is more humorless than the sort of edgy ones who are willing to make the jokes about LGBTQ. It's like, you're not amusing either. You're all actually being boringly serious because, like, you think that comedy is some sort of excuse to sort of settle scores with people you don't like or to make some sort of statement about, you know, a personal branding exercise.
Right.
Where it's like, to me, it's like, it should be about being funny. Like, what actually makes you laugh? Like, I have very little patience or interest in the sort of like, you know, you think it, I say it, you know?
Yeah, right.
There's these two different, there's this dichotomy that's going on right now that comedy is either like super nice and won't offend anybody, or all it does is offend people just for the sake of offending people. Which to me, those are the same thing in a way.
Yeah,
They're both more about personal branding than they are about making anyone laugh. But you know, that's a fogey thing to say.
No, no.
The kids are always right because they'll be the ones alive and we won't be.
Well, anyway, so that's a good example. If you have strength and vulnerability, then you guys could laugh. Do you get it? I don't know. but I just want to make sure because I'm going to make sure that I get all the credits in and make sure that I do another plug for our station. This station is great, right?
Yeah,
Christian,
super.
You've known it. Mm-hmm. You were on another show.
I was on Face Boy's show a long time ago, but I think that's maybe the only time I've ever done
I've done a show.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm going to brag about this to everybody at the station.
Right, man, in their face.
So anyway, you should really check out all of Christian's work and all his specials. And there's so much great stuff. And now you can even get the special for free. It's called...
Show Your Work.
Yeah, Show Your Work.
A lot of words, man.
I've got too much on my brain. Anyway, he's got there's so much stuff. Just go to ChristianFinnegan.com. That's two N's in Finnegan. FINN, okay?
Yeah.
And his Twitter is Christ Finnegan.